Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy. Good, Mark. Yes. Happy birthday!
Thank you, brother. Thank you. All right. And I want to thank all the people on Facebook.
Oh yeah, brother. Hundreds Everybody loves
me
that.
I don't know about that, but
oh yeah,
the people wish me happy birthday too. So thank you so much. So, all right. But before we get into all that, we're not going to talk about my birthday. We have lots of really important things to talk about. We're going to turn this over to WEA Traffic to get you all home nice and safe. Then we turn it over to University of Maryland for Your Health Today for a few minutes. Really interesting story there. And then we jump into the issue of texting while driving.
Big issue around the country.
And we will leap into that. And in the next hour, folks, we're going to talk about, do you really have to go to college? Well, all that and more. Stay with us. We'll be back. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to Your Health Today with the University of Maryland Hospital for Children's Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. We're about to have a conversation with nurse Christine Byerly.
The University of Maryland Neonatal ICU is a 40-bed Level 3C NICU. We receive babies from upstairs through our labor and delivery. We're a high-risk perinatal center, and we receive babies that have been transported in throughout the state of Maryland. We have a joint transport team that is between the University of Maryland and Johns Hopkins Hospital. It's called the Maryland Regional Neonatal Transport Program. So they go out throughout the state and bring babies that need a higher level of care to our NICU. The way our NICU is set up is sort of by geography. So we have these five large rooms, and we group our babies by patient population.
What does that mean?
So, for instance, all of our teeny tiny premature babies, we put together in one room. All of our babies that are a little bit bigger, we put in another room. So, for instance, most full-term pregnancies, moms are pregnant for 40 weeks. That's a full-term pregnancy. So these babies that are born at 24, 25, 26 weeks, really three and a half months premature, we put together. And they need a whole level of specialized care. Babies that are slightly bigger, we put into another room. So, for instance, we're standing in the very low birth weight room. And these babies are born at approximately 28, 29, 30, 31 weeks. Again, still very premature, need lots of help with their breathing, with their feeding, with their thermoregulation, keeping warm. They're in isolates because they can't hold their temperature yet. And then we have a larger room where we put more of our larger full-term babies. These are babies that may have had some kind of a cardiac defect, heart disease, or a genetic anomaly. They may come only for a couple days. Maybe they just didn't transition well and haven't transitioned to the full-term nursery.
So the full-term babies
that maybe just need a day or two of care and then go back to the full-term nursery. And then we also have another area that we put all of our surgical babies in. So regardless of whether it's the teeniest, tiniest little baby or a full-term baby, if they need any kind of surgery, they go in that room. And the nurses are very in tune to working with the surgical team, sending the babies to the OR, caring for the babies when they come back from the OR. And then lastly, we have an area that we call our satellite area. And what we do is, as our growing preemies are growing and learning to eat and gaining weight and weaning from technology, those babies we move to our satellite area. And it's a great place for moms to really get used to taking care of their baby without all that technology and getting ready to go home. And so that is a 10-bed step-down area that we have as well.
So babies would start here.
Babies would start up here when they're first born, and then as they grow and they get better and they wean off of ventilators and they're learning to bottle feed, it takes a lot of effort to coordinate sucking and swallowing or learn to breastfeed. We very much promote breastfeeding in the NICU. They go down there and work on all that before they go home.
So it must be, very difficult, obviously, medically and biologically for these children who were born prematurely at 29, 24 weeks, to do any of those things, because they wouldn't naturally know how to breastfeed, they wouldn't naturally know how to swallow or any of those things.
Exactly. So, again, that all is something that progresses over time, and we have lactation consultants who are specialists in breastfeeding that work with moms on a regular basis. We do things like kangaroo care.
What does that mean?
Kangaroo care is a skin-to-skin care. in which you would put a diaper clad baby, a baby just in a diaper, on a mom's bare chest, and then you cover the baby with a blanket, but the warmth from the parent keeps the baby's body warm, and it really promotes bonding for the parents, and it's a nicety for the parents to be able to experience that, holding their baby in that way.
I'm curious, basically, a personal question?
Sure.
I'm just curious about your work here. I mean,
I have been in the NICU 20 years. I'm about to start my 21st year. I love my job. I have done a multitude of things, everything from patient care and taking care of babies to now I assist the manager with running the unit. We're a large unit. We have 90 nurses. You know, you think about how many nurses you need to take care of 40 babies. It's a lot. It's a big unit. Stories don't always have happy endings. But our job and our role here is to make those memories as comforting and peaceful for that family as we possibly can.
For more information about the Neonatal Intensive Care Unit at the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, you can go to umm.edu/pediatrics or just call 1-800-492-5538. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are joined today by, in studio, by Delegate Mackie McIntosh, who represents the 43rd Legislative District and lead on the legislature's efforts to ban texting while driving and handheld cell phone use. That was my chair just collapsing. But I'm here still, and I wasn't texting. It's good to have you here, Mackie.
Thank you very much. And by the way, I want to say happy birthday again, okay?
Thank you.
I didn't tweet you or Facebook you, but I knew it was your birthday.
Thank you, Maggie. And we are joined by Laurie Kelly. Now, Laurie, the last time we had open phones, Laurie Kelly, who's...
Yes, hi, I'm there.
Welcome, Laurie. Good to have you with us. Laurie wrote on our Facebook page about texting, so we should talk about texting, because as she wrote it, and it was very moving the way she wrote it.
Very
she said,
powerful.
My son, it's hard for me to say, my son killed himself while texting, driving, just last week. And I was just stunned by it, and I think everybody else who was writing on the Facebook page was as well. She said, if you want to talk about this, I'm here. She's a fourth grade special education teacher at Carroll Highlands Elementary in Tacoma Park. And Laura Kelly, sorry for your loss and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And I did Facebook you happy birthday.
Thank you, Laurie. I saw that.
Yeah.
First of all, if you don't mind, when you wrote me, it was so shattering. I mean, any of us who, even if you don't have kids, those of us who do have children, the whole idea of losing a child is more than you can bear to think about.
That's right.
If you want to talk a bit about the story, we'd love to hear it.
Yes. Well, it was May 5th, and this is my birth son, my biological son, who I had a special relationship with. He was driving on his first day to a brand new position in Colorado Springs after graduating in engineering. He had all kinds of scholarships. He had won a National Engineering Award. I mean, he had huge future in front of him. And he was driving, and he was on the highway, and there was a traffic stop suddenly in front of him due to a stalled car. I think he was in the passing lane. And I don't know if he was texting or talking. The accident report said he was using a cell phone, so it could have been either one. He couldn't stop in time, and his Subaru slammed into a pickup truck in front of him, and there was rollover, and he was airlifted and died 2.5 hours later. And, you know, the family didn't really have my contact information like he had, and I actually found out by a Facebook email.
Oh, my God.
Which was horrible. So I knew about the new law in Maryland, and I had, you know, advocated for it, but now I'm learning even more about it.
Delegate McIntosh, talk about what happened in the state legislature and how strong or not strong this bill is that we passed.
Well, I have good news, and the good news is, and you're going to find this, I think, actually horrifying, that the law actually says that you cannot send a text message. But the bill that says you cannot read a text message did not make it through the Senate this year. So we have some unfinished business on texting. And we also, by the way, this year did pass a bill that basically says that having a cell phone, talking on a cell phone, is a secondary offense,
right.
Not a primary offense. And by the way, the bill I had introduced that did not make it called it a primary offense. So we do have work to do. You know, the whole notion of distracted driving, I think Oprah now is doing a big promotion around it. I know that AT&T is doing a promotion around this. Distracted driving is, I think, the number one transit highway safety issue that we have facing us today.
Yes, I even read that National Safety Council said that 28% of accidents involve a cell phone. I think that's incredible. That's almost one-third.
Now, Mark, if I can make a point, the first time we had the cell phone, ban of cell phone bills introduced in the legislature, it was under a delegate who passed away a few years ago, John Arnick. Mm. And the first time he introduced it, probably 12 years ago, at that time, and this was part of the testimony in the floor debate that I gave, at that time you could do two things with a cell phone. You could receive a call and you could make a call.
Right.
And if you take out my little phone right now out of my pocket, I can tell you that I can receive an email or send an email. I can receive an IM, instant message, or I can send one. I can look at my calendar. I can put something on my calendar. I can videotape something. I can take a picture. I can go to Facebook.
You can upload stuff.
I can go to Facebook. I can tweet. And, oh, by the way, I can make a call. So the point is that what we have now in the smartphones and, you know, this new generation of phones is not just people making calls and receiving calls. It's people who are involved in actually typing while driving, typing. And so your head has to tilt down,
right,
and you have to actually focus on that. And so that's why we need to put a ban on cell phones while driving, and we need to make sure that not only can you not send a text, you also can't read a text.
Delegate McIntosh, I'm very curious about what some of the opposition used to oppose the legislation. It seems very common sense.
here's where at least a few of the senators, if I might add, got confused. The cell phone bill, to get it through, because everybody just wants their cell phone, and what if I have an emergency, and yada, 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 even though we had an exemption for emergency. The cell phone bill said you couldn't use a cell phone while the car was in motion. That's fine. But that does mean at stoplights and other places, you're going to get that thing out of your pocket and start using it. Okay. But the text messaging, reading text messages, they decided, oh, let's do that for the text messages. It's a primary offense, but let's say while the car is in motion. Well, you know, if you start a text while you're sitting at a stoplight, you're not going to stop. Or if you're reading a text sitting at a stoplight, you're not going to stop when the light turns green. I mean, it's going to continue. And so I think it's the same way with the call. So I just think it was cleaner to do it the other way. And it's because of this amendment that got on at the 11th hour that the bill didn't pass.
Laurie, you were talking about how you thought in this email to me about how ineffective you think this law is.
Yes. not just because it's not treated as a primary offense where people can receive a ticket for using talking or texting on a cell phone, you know, as a first offense. But the secondary, for those people who don't know, because I just learned, the secondary offense means you have to be committing some other violation in order to be stopped and ticketed, like they used to do for seatbelts. They did the same thing for seatbelts, and then they made it a primary offense. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's weak about it is it. The current law only it allows hands-free cell phones. And they've proven with the National Safety Council that hands-free also distracts a driver because they're still thinking about the conversation and they think that it's rude to interrupt someone who's talking to them, whereas if there's a passenger in the car, they'll say, wait a minute, I got to pay attention right now. But when they're in the middle of a conversation, they might not want to interrupt someone, and also the person on the other end of the phone doesn't know that, you know, something's happening and they need to stop talking.
Let me just 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Should we ban all, not just texting while driving, which is not banned, but use of cell phone while driving? Now, I admit I do not text when I drive, but I do use my cell phone when I drive. And I think many people do. Yeah. And should that be banned altogether? And what are your thoughts? 410-319-8888, co-hosting today with my partner, Anthony McCarthy. Joining us, Delegate Maggie McIntosh and Laurie Kelly, 410-319-8888. Delegate Maggie McIntosh leading that fight in the state legislature, represents the 43rd Legislative District. And Laurie Kelly lost her son driving while either texting or using his cell phone and joins us by phone. You were going to say something, Maggie?
Yeah, I was going to say that the texting while driving, actually sending a text, is a primary offense. It's the use of a cell phone to talk on the phone that is a secondary. But the bottom line is, I mean, should we move totally to not having cell phones in cars? I think that's hard for people today to do, but here's where we kind of drew the line. When people said, well, doesn't the conversation itself, I mean, you know, distract you? The answer is sure. But if you ever have had a blowout of a tire and you've had both hands on the wheels, you know that you had more control than if you had one hand on the wheel. And so that's why hands-free at this point is preferable. It's not perfect, but it's preferable. But we do think people ought to put their cell phones away more and more. I think that's the Oprah message. Put your cell phones away.
But it's getting so prevalent now, and I really want listeners to join us here at 410-319-8888. Maybe you're driving now and using your cell phone. What do you think? 410-319-8888. Or perhaps you are. This is an issue that means a lot to you, and we want to hear your thoughts because it's being banned in many places. There are many countries around the globe that ban both texting and calling, and some actually give prison sentences for people using cell phones while driving. Now, I'm not advocating that, but a lot of people are calling in. Let's get your calls here, 410-319-8888. I mean, I tell this story a lot and told it the other day after we got the email from Laurie Kelly, the Facebook message. I mean, I remember it was just a few weeks ago. It happens more than once. You can tell, first of all, when people are doing it because it's how they slide when they drive.
Oh, yeah.
And the new way of looking is to always – people talk to you, but their heads are always tilted because they're always looking down at this bloody phone that we all have. But one day I was driving down Route 83, and all of a sudden I saw this car listing to the right from the fast lane to the middle lane, and I'm watching this car come over. And then I saw the person in the car not watching the road but having his head tilted down to the right. And I lay on the horn, but he kept coming over, and I had to move over. Another car was coming to my right. That car had to go onto the shoulder and almost spun out, and I just laid on the horn, and the person just finally woke up. But that's the kind of stuff that happens, and that is the madness that I think has to end. So let's hear what our listeners think at 410-319-8888. James, you're driving now. You're on the air. What's up?
I'm here in Baltimore right now, and I'm driving on the highway. And I really feel sorry about the young lady with her son. And I do agree that texting while driving is a lot more difficult than just driving on a cell phone. And I must add that most cars today is equipped with a Bluetooth capability. Mm-hmm. And as mine is, mine's you can just plug it right into the phone, and I'm talking to you right now through the whole car. So
right.
I have both of my hands on the steering wheel, but at most of the times I just have one, and I'm fully capable of driving with that. But by the same token, I do believe that we should also implement that we should have a Bluetooth capability car or a Bluetooth in our ear in order to drive or use your cell phone. Other than that, I just don't. It is entirely too dangerous.
I was wondering.
Thank you, James, so much for the calls.
What Lori Kelly and Delegate McIntosh think, as we were doing the research for today's show, a lot of the states have moved towards banning texting, obviously, banning cell phone use, especially among teenagers. Is that because that the statistics bear out that young people in particular have a very difficult time with distracted driving?
Right. Young people, for instance, in Maryland, if you're on a provisional license right now, you can only have so many passengers in a car. We don't allow anymore having 4 and 5 kids who, with the driver on a provisional license in a car driving people. And there was a lot of opposition to that. You know, parents said, well, what about my kid? I count on them to do the carpooling, you know, or take kids back and forth to lacrosse. And I'm like, all right. because it is true that young drivers, people who are first behind the wheel, you know, that aren't experienced, their reaction time, although it may be faster for a younger person, sometimes is wrong. And that's where the highest percentage of collisions were, and that's where a very high percentage of the deaths were.
Younger people.
Yeah. So we have actually extended the provisional license in Maryland by a couple of months, and we very quickly, about 4 years ago, said no texting, no cell phones. When you're on a provisional license, you can't have more than, I think it's 2 unrelated, students or people in the car.
In the car. Let me get some listeners in here and also hear more from Laurie Kelly at 410-319-8888. A lot of folks are calling in. And Mario in Columbia, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you doing?
Well, Mario, welcome.
I'm kind of passionate about that subject because for years I used to be a professional truck driver, tractor-trailer driver. And even before that, I remember, you know, learning about the Smith driving system and where they talk about, you know, you have to be aware of everything that's going on because driving, first of all, it's a civic duty. It's a responsible act that we have to do. And we're responsible for our lives and the lives of others when we're on the road. And I certainly do not like the idea of texting or talking on the telephone while you're driving, for the simple reason the brain cannot really simultaneously process these two functions at the same time.
Right.
Contrary to what a lot of people think, they think they can multitask, but in actuality, what the brain is actually doing is switching from one task to another. You cannot focus on both of them at the same time. There's too much that goes on while you're driving for you to be distracted by texting, by talking on the phone. I've even seen people reading books and stuff.
Oh my
gosh,
so have I. Yes.
The other day we
Makeup.
Saw somebody shuffling papers. They had the papers up on the steering wheel. I can't see how you can read and do stuff like that while you're driving. All it takes is to have something happen in front of you all of a sudden and you look up and there you go. You hit the person in front or something like that.
Yep.
So I really believe that driving, texting and talking on the phone don't mix because the brain simply cannot process all of this information all at once. That's what I want to just have to say.
Mario, thank you so much. Laurie, would you like to comment?
Yes. First of all, about young people being kept from using texting or cell phones, I did read that there's laws in 20 to 25 states addressing teens, and it's only 7 that, like Maryland, actually ban the use of handheld cell phones for either use. And then as far as addressing teens, that's fine, but I believe that there's a real strong culture among our youth, and I mean people into their 20s especially, that it's part of their social network, it's part of their habit, and it's almost like an addiction that is hard for them to stop. Even though they might know on some level that it's unsafe, everybody's doing it. Everyone's expecting them to answer the phone when they call. Everyone's expecting to constantly have a cell phone glued to their ear.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you know the provisional licenses, you know, helps out the teens, but it goes into the 20s. It really does.
I know we want to go back to the phones. We have a lot of people who want to join in this conversation. I want to ask you, though, Delegate McIntosh, when we were talking about this afternoon, I mentioned it to one of my colleagues at City Hall who said, you know, it's a personal freedom issue for him.
Yeah.
He said, you know, I understand that people want to look out for our well-being, but shouldn't I be able to use my phone? Shouldn't I be able, you know, I'm a safe driver. I try to be attentive, but I'm trying to do business. I'm trying to stay in touch and connected. I don't want to be left behind. And this is a personal freedom issue. What do you say? And I'm sure you heard it a lot during the session.
Yeah, that's one of the, as a matter of fact, arguments that people use. It's personal freedom, just like they do with helmets, you know. We've made helmets mandatory on certain, you know, motorcycles. We need to do it on more, like bicycles, because, you know, it's okay to say it's my personal freedom until you find that statistically it's causing death and causing, you know, dismemberment and tremendous tragedies. The same thing with seatbelts. We know that seatbelts work. We know they save lives. And so it's not a personal freedom anymore to drive without it, particularly if you have young people in the car.
Cell phones kill other people, too, not just themselves.
Right.
You know, other drivers, other passengers, pedestrians, cyclists.
Mm-hmm.
So. But I will tell you, by the way, Anthony, there's much more support than there was when these bills were first introduced. I was really surprised.
Is that education? And
it's education, and I believe as I looked around the room at the committee, my committee, when I was giving my testimony, you know, people said to me, look, I've always opposed this bill. I've always opposed a ban. Because remember, mine was a ban, primary, mm-hmm. make it a primary offense. And they said, but I know that I am multitasking as I'm going down the road.
Right.
I know what I'm doing. And I know that I'm setting a bad example for my kids. So I do think there's much more support. And I hope next year when we get back to the General Assembly, if we can move some of these bills a little earlier in the session, that we will have better results, particularly with the primary offense for cell phones.
Let's return to our listeners at 410-319-8888. Dave in Columbia, you're on the air.
Yeah, Mark, sometimes I just think the whole idea of talking on the phone and driving, I just think that the general public is really, they kind of like lose awareness of where they're at. And I just happen to be a motorcycle rider, and I have had more than one hairy occasion when I've been almost run off the road, and time I escape that hairy situation, I look at the driver, and the driver's on their cell phone.
Right.
So it's just and unfortunately, I mean, I'm driving and talking now, but
on the motorcycle?
No.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, good.
Driving in a car now and talking on a cell phone, that motorcycle thing is really hairy when it comes to people on cell phones. And I think people just really get really distracted and lose awareness of, you know, maybe where they're at and what they're doing. You know?
Well, you know, I it's a hard one because, I mean, I use – is anybody here – do you use cell phone when you're driving?
I do. And, Mark, up until about 2 months ago, I was – even texting while I was driving.
Oof.
And I will tell you what scared, and when I say scared the life out of me, I was going down 83. I was staying in Timonium. I was texting, responding to a text. And I just happened, looking down while I'm driving
yes.
down 83, and looked up, and traffic just came to a halt.
And, you weren't right.
And I was texting, and I had to go off into the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
To avoid hitting the car in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not texted while I was driving since. Yeah. It literally, I think if I could have turned white, mm-hmm. I would have turned white out of fear. It really
right.
scared me.
Well,
and I realized how many times I've chanced.
Right.
Let me give you a good a story on myself. It happened just recently. And it's the reason that we need to say you can't text, you can't read, and not put that phrase when the car is in motion.
Yeah.
I was stopped at a red light. Stopped at a red light, and I started texting someone. And when I looked up, I had allowed my car to start rolling.
Oh, my.
Wow.
It was, you know, I just hadn't focused on it. And I was rolling into the crosswalk. I mean, I don't know where I would have been, middle of the intersection. But my point is I jammed on the brakes, and I thought, my goodness, what if somebody had been walking in that? You know, so there's – it is – just something we have to stop doing.
Let's go to the effects one. There's a couple of more people here, and they one or two don't agree with this. And let's go to James in Baltimore, who doesn't think it's an important issue. James, you're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, I generally don't see this as a major concern of my own. I talk on the phone while driving. I text while driving. But the concept I'm really getting at is, where does this stop? Where does this obsession with this being a problem stop? Should we remove all radios from cars? Should we remove cup holders? Should people all drive automatics so that their one hand is not on the standard transmission gear shift while we're driving? It just seems like it's a bandwagon that everyone has jumped on. And I don't really perceive this as a problem.
Well, all right, I hear what you're saying, and I almost can hear the arguments that you could have whether people have to wear helmets or not when they're riding motorcycles, and that's a personal issue or not a personal issue. But
right.
What you're saying now, though, I mean, let's talk about this for just a second. I mean, if all the studies are showing us that texting while driving is tantamount to and worse than drinking while driving, having had four drinks, there's something you just can't kind of say, oh, well, okay, it's just a personal freedom issue. It's like the slippery slope of arguing people, whether you believe in gay marriage or not. People will say, oh, if you believe in gay marriage, then you believe in a marriage to goats. Well, you don't. So, you know, you might have a glass of water while you're driving, but it's not quite the same thing as texting while you're driving, where your mind is completely focused on something else. I mean, because don't you think that is a safety issue for the folks around you?
I don't believe that it really is that distracting. I believe that studies have been skewed because people want to see this data, so they create a study that demonstrates such data. So yeah. I'm not convinced that studies really are that unbiased. I think it's a popular issue to jump on the bandwagon, and so people have agreed to sort of see that.
No, I don't
want to see.
I think there was a great deal of lobby against, you know, these bills originally. But I think, you know, frankly, the death tolls, I think the statistics on accidents, particularly among young people. And I might add, by the way, something that Laura said, that, you know, texting is very much a culture among young people well into their 30s and 40s. And so, and you know, frankly, some of us 60-year-olds have picked it up. But nevertheless, texting and talking on the phone, but particularly the act of typing in words, sentences, phrases, is much more distracting than reaching over and pushing a button to go to the scan to the next radio station. I do think that there are things you can do in the car that can take your, you know, attention off of it. The old cigarette lighter, when we mm-hmm. some of us used to smoke and drive in the car, you know, that was also a hazard. But texting, I think, by far is the worst hazard I've seen while driving in terms of its distraction.
James, I appreciate you being part of the program. Let's see what the listeners have to say. And 410-319-8888 and get back to our other guest, Laurie Kelly. Let's go to who's been waiting. Derek, you've been waiting a long time. You're on the air.
Good evening. Good afternoon.
Hi, Derek.
Hi, Derek.
Welcome.
Miss Laurie hit a sore spot when she mentioned you need both hands on the wheel, first of all, out of 2 points, to maintain a car if you have a blowout in the front, if it's a front-wheel drive vehicle. That's a whole different animal that should, you know, that's a whole different issue. Front-wheel drive vehicles, when they blow out in the front, that's an animal that you need four hands on the wheel. Two hands is not going to make a difference versus one. All right, number two.
I'm not sure I agree with that, but go ahead.
Number two, we were all kind of created equal, but we developed very different. I used to be a professional driver. I would multitask on four things over the course of 20 years on the road religiously. Four things at once without ever, even the D.C. rush hour traffic, Atlanta, Georgia, the worst of the worst. Without having a problem. My only problem with distraction was arguing with the passenger. That resulted in an accident. Multitasking between the radio, the phone, the CB, talking to a passenger, it was never a problem. We developed differently. You have commuters, you have professional drivers, you have beginners. They're not all the same.
But I think that there are also a lot of statistics, Derek, about the vast number of accidents. I don't have them in front of me, but I remember from other shows that are caused by long-distance drivers, truck drivers especially, because they are multitasking, because they are driving when they're very sleepy, because they're pushing their load so they don't lose money, which, you know, people don't want to lose their money. But that multitasking is something that we all think we have a control over, and I'm not sure we do. I think maybe you were just very lucky that nothing happened to you or the people around you.
Yeah, I agree. And we don't actually write laws for people who, you know, drive every day professionally, except maybe the trucking industry around safety. I mean, there are a lot of people. You can think of taxi drivers and chauffeurs and people who drive professionally who really do have a good command of the road. But that's not who's out on the road. Who's out on the road is you and me and our children and our nieces and the nephews and our loved ones. And having someone, you know, say, oh, I can multitask and drive is paramount to say, oh, I can have four glasses of wine and drive. Depends on your body type. It depends on a lot of things. And so you can't say, you know, people of a certain weight can have four glasses of wine, or people of a certain experience can multitask while driving.
Now, Laurie, I don't want to leave you out of this. You haven't said anything for a bit. You want to jump in here?
I just want to say that the pledge that Oprah had on her No Phone Zone show April 30th, it involved people promising that if they did make a cell phone call, they would pull over to do it. So that means that we can make important calls, but we shouldn't just be socializing, chit-chatting, you know, what are you doing, what am I doing, that kind of thing.
I mean, it would be difficult. See, both these guys are texting right now. They're texting while talking.
Way to go.
410-319-8880. It's hard because I'm looking at the computer screen. I'm watching this, looking at the phones, talking to my guests. Mm-hmm. And multitasking is not an easy thing to do. But being behind the wheel, now, how much of it should we ban? I'm curious what you think. 410-319-8888. Margaret in Beverly Hills are on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi,
Margaret.
Hi, Anthony and Mark. I really think it's irresponsible for someone to say that it's their right to do a thing that endangers other people. You know, you get behind the wheel. The purpose of you being behind the wheel is to get to your destination and to get to it as safe as possible. And then when you have the audacity to say, well, I can text, I can eat, I can backhand the kids and do all these things when I'm driving because I have the right to do so, it's irresponsible. It's not a mature person doing that. And there are some immature 60-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 18-year-olds. So it's not your right. It's not your right to put someone else's life in danger. I've ridden in cabs where people were on the cell phone. I said, get off the cell phone. You have precious cargo in this car. Oh. I am paying you to take me to my destination. And I say it politely, and they get off of their cell phones,
right,
which are hands-free. Don't talk, you know, don't do things like that. That's irresponsible. Also, one more thing. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been to a trauma center, which I've worked at trauma centers, and you see the result, the head injuries, where people have to learn to walk, talk, cognitive skills all over again because of head injuries from car accidents. And they were a result of people doing something, either driving drunk, you know, someone else, you're an innocent person, someone hits you, or someone is bending down to pick something up. You know, those type of accidents fall in the criteria of injuring someone else. You know, and people have been maimed and, you know, crippled. It's horrible. And for you, and not like for you to walk through a trauma center or walk through a coronary rehab center and see people trying to build their lives back again because of someone else's foolishness, someone else is saying that I have a right to do this or that. That's ridiculous.
Well, but,
you know, people call in and say, it's my right. You know, that's ridiculous.
Margaret, thank you.
I appreciate you weighing in on this, Margaret. Mm-hmm. That someone just wrote in here, though, and then we'll go to William, who's driving. He has a comment on texting. We'll go to him next. That the it just went away. Where did it go? Come back. See, I'm multitasking and I've lost.
We lose William?
No, not we didn't lose William. Somebody said, "What should police and other emergency responders be banned from using cell phones as well?"
I think actually there was some consideration for emergency calls in the bill. And so if they're using their cell phone and they're texting or making calls recreationally, they shouldn't be able to do it. But most of them, by the way, have these push button kind of devices in their car that they get, you know, the calls that is not like a cell phone. Well, and there's an exception for that in the bill if you're if for police and fire.
So I have seen – go ahead.
No, I was going to say that when Mayor Dixon gave an executive order banning police officers from talking on their cell phones mm-hmm. when it was not work-related. And mm-hmm. I see many police officers, obviously, still driving around talking on their telephones, but I know it was a directive from Mayor Dixon that she did not want because there were so many accidents that were actually taking place with police officers and their vehicles.
And how can you be watching the streets if you're
– if you're talking on the phone.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I agree. If it's recreational, no. But if it's an emergency call, that's what they're there for.
William on the road, you're on the air. Hi, William?
Talking to you, you know, and the reason why I decided to call you, if I have to answer a call, I put the phone on speakerphone, I put the phone in my pocket, so I'm not doing anything, but I'm just listening and I'm talking, so I don't have to be doing anything. But why I called you, I just saw. I was coming on Martin Luther King Drive, heading east, and I saw a police officer on his phone.
Hey, William, wait, it's hard to understand you because I think you have your radio on as you're talking.
Oh, no, I don't. Oh, that's my GPS. That was my GPS.
You got a lot of things going on, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm saying, I saw this police officer when he came to the stoplight on the other side. And I saw him with his phone like he was texting. I don't know if he was texting, but I saw him put it to his ear shortly after. So I figure he must have been dialing a number. And he was a police officer. And can I sanction him for using the phone too while to driving?
I guess you could if you wanted to call his precinct.
Right.
Give the number in.
Something.
Absolutely can.
Police cars have an ID number on it. So you
can do that. We have to get a very short break. We're going to come right back. And Lakeisha, Andy, Daniel, you're all lined up. We'll get to all your calls as we talk to Delegate Maggie McIntosh and Laurie Kelly. Anthony McCarthy and I will be right back to talk with you in just a minute. On the way to break, remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary specialty and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state, call 1-800-492-5538. We'll be right back. Right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy. It's our Monday together when Mark and I get together about these very important issues, and it's Mark's birthday. I keep saying that because I'm so just so proud of all the things you've accomplished, and here
Thank
we
you,
are
brother.
Celebrating another birthday, so it's good to be here with you on this special
yeah,
day. In the studio, we're talking about a very important issue. Delegate Maggie McIntosh is with us in the studio. She represents Maryland's 43rd Legislative District, and she's been sharing with us and educating us on texting while driving, using your cell phone while driving, and the transition that has taken place among many legislators over the last 10 years as cell phones have developed. Also joining us, Laurie Kelly. Her son was killed in a traffic accident while using his phone. We're not sure if he was texting or making a call. She is a fourth grade special education classroom teacher in Tacoma Park. And Lori, welcome to the program. We really enjoyed having you on with us this hour. I want to begin. We have a bunch of folks who want to get into this conversation with Mark and our guests. But I want to begin. Delegate McIntosh, I was looking at the states that actually do ban, whether it's talking on the phone or texting on the phone. And the fines are very small.
Yes, they are. As a matter of fact, we had a fine in my bill of $100. And the Senate, I'm going to blame it on the Senate again, but it's true. They lowered it to 40.
Wow.
But the fines are small, and it's you need stricter fines. And frankly, you need to have repeat offenders lose their license, I think, in situations like this at some point. But that's, I think this is a progressive thing. It's like we started with seatbelts, We started with seatbelts as a secondary offense, moved it to a primary offense. And Anthony, both of you know that the issue there was racial profiling.
Most definitely.
Whether or not, and now we've moved past that. It's a safety issue. I do think that you'll see the same thing with cell phones.
Lori, what do you think should happen? What do you think the law should be?
Well, first of all, I'm wondering if one reason why they might be starting with secondary and then maybe moving to primary is if it was a primary offense and you have a huge number of people talking on the cell phone. I mean, they do. It seems like half of the drivers do. What kind of an enforcement, what a challenge that would be to police. They would be constantly stopping people for using a cell phone if it was a primary offense. So I think that might be one consideration. I was wondering, Delegate McIntosh, if you know that if whether that was factored into the decision.
Actually, we've seen statistics from other states that have banned cell phone use or gone hands-free, as we call it. D.C., our capital, Washington, has gone hands-free. And if you drive in Washington, D.C. now, where everybody thinks they're so important, they do not have their BlackBerries to their ears anymore. You don't see it. People are focused on driving. And usually if you see someone with a cell phone to their ear, you notice their tags from out of state. So I would say that where there has been a good education program, telling people, here's the fine you're going to get if we see you using your cell phone, $100 or $40, even $40. I do think behavior changes. We've seen it with speed cameras. We've seen it with red light cameras. And I think you'll see it as we progress down the road of, really banning hands-held phones.
It does change your behavior. As soon as
most
I cross, I go to at least once or twice a month, I'm driving through New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I hit New Jersey border, the phone goes down. I mean, I just stop.
It does.
We're on a turnpike. I think you do change. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll have to go to a Bluetooth.
Mark, you're so right. As I drive into Washington, D.C., right there on New York Avenue where they have those cameras, those speed cameras, for years now, I automatically slow down because you do not – it only takes getting that ticket mailed to you once. You decide to change your behavior.
Lakeisha and – Daniel and Andy and Alonzo, let's get to your calls. 1, 2, 3, 4, and Lakeisha, you're on the air.
Lakeisha. Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
First, I wanted to extend my condolences to Ms. Kelly. I sincerely apologize you had to go through such a tragedy in your family.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Happy birthday, Mark.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say you are absolutely right. I think it was Ms. Kelly that said it. It's a culture. I know I'm in my 20s, and I simply, it's an addiction. It really is. I'll be in my bed, and I'll text, and I am. I do it at work. I do it at church. I hope my mother's not listening. I just do it. And it's just so hard. Like, a friend of mine sent me such a graphic email that brought me to tears about somebody who had been in an accident, and I stopped for, 2 days. And after that, I kept doing it. But I just wanted to say there's actually, in this, there is a possibility for somebody to come up with some software. I saw a software out there, and I haven't tried it. I'm going to get it. And allegedly, the software, you can speak your words,
and it will send a text. I think it's through voice recognition.
Yeah.
So I don't, I haven't looked into it, but I mean, that's definitely an opportunity for somebody to make some kind of money. But more importantly, it is so irresponsible, a complete and utter foolishness for someone to say that because they've been driving professionally for 20 years or because their hand-to-eye coordination is on the level of a genius, that they feel it's their personal right to be able to text and drive. I mean, these are the same people that will let their dogs go on your lawn and scream while they're listening to the earphones on the plane because they're just considering rude. But I think everybody knows that's completely not a foolishness that has nothing to do with your personal freedom. If you want to be personally free, then text while you're walking around your house and all you can do is fall down the stairs.
I have to tell you, this is a kind of a funny aside. I saw somebody the other day. Well, the other day, it was a few months back, but was texting while walking and walked into a pole. 410-319-8888. Thank you for that call, Lakeisha. And Daniel, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Daniel. You're on the air.
Okay. I have just a couple things. I've calmed myself down. Thank the lady for at least letting me get on the air. One thing, it has to be punitive. When you get on an aircraft anywhere in this country, what's the first thing they tell you to do?
Turn your cell phones off.
Right. Any gadget. It doesn't matter what it is. Turn it off. And you'll sit there for hours with it off. You'll be out of touch, and you will either sleep or you'll read or you'll do something else. But you will be out of touch because it is the law, and it is enforced. If you enforce the laws, there's no problem. Second, punitive. It should be punitive. 90 days, first offense.
90 days what?
Phone. You take the car.
That's heavy.
That's punitive.
That's his look. He has the right to his opinion.
Driving is not anything but a privilege. It's explained to you in your driver's manual when you first go in to get your little learner's permit. It's a privilege. It's not an entitlement. You don't have an entitlement to do anything in this country. It's a privilege to be able to drive. If you break or you dishonor that privilege, you should lose it. Take the car. Let them text their butts off.
All right, I can see that you're very serious about this, and I'm glad you did get through. And I think that that's a range of emotions I've heard from a number of people. I feel that way too when I'm almost sitting on the road. I get so angry about it when it happens. But let's go to another call, though. I appreciate it, Danny, because I'm going to try to get some calls before the end of the hour. I think there's somebody who disagrees with us is on the air here, and Alonzo, you're on the air.
For taking my call. I don't know if you can hear me clearly.
Go ahead. Yes. Go ahead, Lonzo. You're on the air.
Well, I appreciate that. I am on my wireless device at this time.
Okay.
I'll be brief. I think that there's no way you should consider not permitting police officers to while they're at work. I think they have enough issues to deal with. And I'm not a police officer. And, in fact, I'm not a fan of the police officers in the city and or the police department. However, I just think that these are people that are entrusted with people's lives, and if you can't entrust them to utilize their cell phones responsibly, how then are you suggesting that we entrust them with firearms? It's like a contradictory. You can't trust them to use their cell phones personally and responsibly, but at the same time, you can entrust them with the safety of the citizens of the city. I don't know if you guys are talking about strictly texting or making telephone calls using your cell phone with a hands-free device. I think that those are two entirely different.
Well, I think I think they can be very different things. I mean, Maggie, we were talking about you're more concerned about texting. You are talking about talking with hands-free, right?
Right, and texting we think it's the most distractive. But I do think that if you have a hands-free device, so therefore you have, the ability to have both hands on the wheel or be in control of the car if there is some sudden need, that we feel that that's better than, having both hands on a cell phone.
At the top of the hour, it says 2 minutes on my screen. So, sorry, didn't see that. Let's we have to go. I didn't realize we were out of time.
It was Laurie wonderful.
Laurie Kelly, thank you so much for joining
thank
us. And again,
thank you,
Laurie.
So
we're all so sorry for your loss.
Absolutely, Laurie.
Well, this helped a lot. It really did.
That's good. I'm glad we could do that for you, and I'm glad you could do that for our citizens. Thank you so much for being here. And Delegate Maggie McIntosh, always a pleasure having you in the studio.
Thank
great
you.
To see you again.
Always
you.
A pleasure.
Always. Anthony and I will be back in just a minute. We're going to continue a conversation and look at, do you really have to go to college to make life good for yourself in the next hour? So stay with us for that. We have a really good, interesting guest here to be part of that show. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And as we leave into the conversation, I have to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News & World Report in their annual Best Hospitals Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. Well, Anthony, before we leap into our conversation here about colleges.
That's right.
We'll do a little show together on Wednesday about the elections that are taking place tomorrow around the country.
I'm excited about this, yeah.
This is there's a populist anger rising up in America, is
there
not?
And we've seen it happen already in Utah and West Virginia, where longtime elected officials were turned out in their primary by what was considered at one time long-shot challengers, unseated Senator Bennett of Utah and Congressman Mollahan of West Virginia. Both turned out, Bennett in a Republican convention and Mollahan in a Democratic primary in West Virginia, by candidates who kind of portrayed themselves as conservative populists.
Right.
And so, Mark, tomorrow, 3 big primaries we're going to be watching. Pennsylvania, Arlen Specter, the longtime Republican senator who last year became a Democrat with the support of the president, Governor Rendell, and the Democratic leadership, is facing an amazing challenge by Congressman Sustak. Now, the amazing thing about that, Mark, just about 3.5 weeks ago, Senator Specter was like 20, 25 points ahead of his challenger in the primary. But then they started running these ads. About the bailouts. They started running ads about his relationship with George Bush. They play a commercial in Pennsylvania of George Bush endorsing Arlen Specter.
Oh, my God.
And saying, I need you to send Arlen Specter back to Washington, George W. Bush. And it's playing against Specter because the progressives in the Republican Party are buying into this message.
You mean Democratic
Party. In the Democratic Party are buying into this message. Was he an opportunist? Did he just join our party so he could stay in power? Do we need to send somebody fresh to the United States Senate from Pennsylvania? Arlen Specter may lose after switching parties in this primary. It'll be really exciting to watch and see what happens.
It'll say a great deal.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've been watching this always come from the right. It's been the teabaggers.
Tea partiers.
This is coming from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party that elected Barack Obama.
Isn't that something? They're mad, Mark. You and I were talking before we went on the air about Blanche Lincoln, the senator, 2-term senator in Arkansas, being challenged by the lieutenant governor, whose name escapes me right off the top of my head, Bill Halter, from the left. They're saying that she has not been pushing progressive issues, that she hasn't been talking about the issues and remember, Arkansas is a very conservative state.
It went for McCain.
But she's being challenged from her left. They say she's too cozy with corporate interests, too cozy with Wall Street. And she may, if she survives, Mark, and some of the polls are showing that she's maintaining her lead in Arkansas after being beaten up by the left to in this primary, now then she'll have to face the right as she runs for the general election. Now, in Arkansas, you have to get a majority or you have to participate in the runoff. It's unlike some states.
Uh-huh.
So if she does not get more than 51% in tomorrow's primary, she has to run against in a runoff with the second place. Now, it could be Mr. Halter or it could be someone else. But it really just depends on if she's able to do that.
And then on the Republican side of the fence in Kentucky.
Wow, Mark. Something really interesting. Kentucky is a conservative state. It's a red state. Nobody's, disputing that. But there is the Secretary of State who is running, the favorite candidate of the party. His name is Trey Grayson, Dick Armey, Mitch McConnell, all of the Newt Gingrich, all of the Republican leadership has endorsed this candidate, a rising star in the party for a long time. Out of nowhere, a little known a state senator named and people are going to recognize this name if I can find it here.
Paul.
And I'm trying to think of what his first name is. But he is Rand Paul. That's his name.
Rand Paul.
Rand
right.
Paul. He is the son of Congressman Ron Paul, who ran for president, has been a thorn in the Democrat side and the Republican side. He was written off, Mark. They said there was no way he could win.
It's a Looney Tunes.
He's kind right. of far right. I wouldn't go to say that. But and the Tea Party, the Teabaggers have been rushing into Kentucky, spending a lot of money into Kentucky. Sarah Palin's been in Kentucky. They're all really pushing. And everybody said, well, let them all come. There's no way he can defeat this Republican.
But he just may.
Mark, all three polls, whether we're talking about Rasmussen, we're talking the other one with the Q, they're all putting Rand Paul ahead of the Republican Secretary of State.
There's a populist anger in America.
What do you think that's about, though? Are they mad about health care?
Well, they're mad about health care because of the way it was done. And even those who wanted health care for all in America are upset because the way they thought it was compromised,
right.
whether you're on the right or the left. People
That's
were
right.
really upset about this legislation. And I don't think our president handled it very well, and that was part of the problem. I think that there is just a seething anger about the corporate world and Wall Street in America.
From both sides, like you said, from the left
and
the right. And they're angry.
Regular old citizens, just really sick of it. And I think that Krugman had an interesting Paul Krugman in the New York Times today, that establishment newspaper. But what Paul Krugman was saying was that there's an anger in America, and the anger in America doesn't follow kind of the rhetoric of the analysis. I mean, about what's wrong with the country, and you would expect it going from the left instead of the right. But people's visceral instincts are more on the right with anger than on the left when it comes to the American people. And so that's kind of fueling this right populist movement in America. And I think that that's where the trend will be, though in the long term, I think that anger changes because the demographics in America are changing. So this is kind of a last gasp in many ways, I think, historically, for the right-wing anger. Not say last gasp, but I think it's not where the future's going. But there's a lot of anger throughout America about the state of our nation, about the immigration thing. People are just nuts about it, and people are crazy about Wall Street getting away with murder and the power of Wall Street on our congressmen and controlling our congressmen. So I think that in our U.S. Congress, and I think that's what we've seen, that we've seen that being reflected now across the United States.
And if these incumbents, Mark, including the favored in Kentucky, the Republican Secretary of State, if they're able to pull off these primaries and beat back these challenges from the right or the left, a lot of people are saying that bodes very well for the Democrats come November, because maybe the impact, because, traditionally the party in the White House loses seats in Congress, they're anticipating that Barack Obama's Democratic Party may lose a lot of seats in the House and some of these Senate challenges. But if, in fact, things don't turn out to be the throw the bums out that we're seeing happening tomorrow, that may bode well for Barack Obama and his party when it comes to these midterm elections in November.
I think it'll be a mixed signal, no matter what happens. I think that there is still this anger from the bottom in this country coming up now. And I think that the Democrats, all right, there was an interesting quote by a white Democrat, an older working-class white Democrat, the way he was described in the Sunday Times that I was reading yesterday. And he said, I voted for Barack Obama, and I think I'm going to vote the other way in this election against Specter.
Mm-hmm.
And I might even vote for a Republican in the general. He says, because what I saw with Barack Obama was all sizzle and no steak. So I think there's a lot of feeling like that in America now. I mean, people love the idea of Obama, but people, I think, are really upset with what they've seen as the same old people in power in Washington, D.C., nothing changing. So that feeling is very real. So no matter if these establishing guys win or not win, they've been bloodied and dented here. And I think that this is something else is brewing in this country. I don't know where it's going to go. But I think that there's people are just sick of what's happening. And the polls are all over the place. So it'd be really interesting to see. We're actually going to do a show Wednesday together.
That's going to be very interesting. So regardless of what happens.
Yeah, and to look at where this is going. And we right now in Maryland, we have in the Republican primary, there's a tea bar. I'm going to call him a tea bagger. A tea party.
Tea party.
Tea party. A tea party partier from Montgomery County. What's his name?
Remember, we tried, Mark, and I didn't have a chance to run and look it up.
But he's been endorsed by the former chairman of the state Republican Party.
He's gotten support from a lot of the people. Now, this is the interesting thing, Mark. Bob Ehrlich has been aligning himself with the Tea Party
in
the
state.
He spoke at the rally in Annapolis. Right. But it seems like a lot of the Tea Party, and they hate being called tea baggers, by the way.
Because it's
so
I wonder why. But they used to call themselves in the beginning. Remember
they did. They called themselves tea baggers, but now they really don't like that phrase. But he is being challenged from the right in this state. And Bob Ehrlich, a lot of people keep saying it's a blue state. Bob Ehrlich's the only hope for the Republican Party. Well, there are people in that party who are saying, wait a minute, we're going to challenge this governor on a lot of issues, including growing government and some of the other things that happened.
And we'll see it in the congressional election in the first district with Andy Harris and Cradiville. Cradiville trying to keep his seat. Andy Harris is going to run from the right as a Tea Party person.
And raising a lot of money to challenge
a lot of money.
Cradiville.
And I think that Cradiville did himself no favors by really in many ways, I think, during his time in Congress, not showing the spine and fortitude he could have. So stand up. You know, when he was asked about offshore drilling, he said, I have to study it. I said, what do you mean you have to study it? Yeah, people want to hear you stand for something. Whether they agree with you or not, they want you to stand for something.
Remember Congressman Gilchrist when he represented that district?
Right.
One of the things I think Democrats and Republicans respected about him,
right.
He stood where he stood, and he was never afraid to tell you why he believed something and challenge you on
right.
why he believed it. And he would often say, well, I'll leave it to the voters. And
right.
And I think Cradiville could have at least three incidents in my head where he could have stood up. And I think his
healthcare was another one.
Healthcare was another one.
Where, say what he believed.
But you have to say, and it can't look like you're making political calculations.
And Wayne didn't do that. Wayne Gilchrist was one of the few politicians I know who actually stood on what he believed, no matter whether he didn't care if he won or lost.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to say what he thought, whether it was from being the best man at his gay brother's wedding to environmental issues,
mm-hmm.
whatever they were. I mean, he was fairly conservative and on the right on a lot of economic issues. And then Wayne Gilchrist is there. But I mean,
and Mark, you know, another issue that I think that you just mentioned and people should not sleep on here in this state because I see it playing itself out is immigration reform. I had Maria Welsh on my program. I've had some other Latino and Hispanic leaders from this state on the program.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark, I have been stunned by the visceral nature of the calls. Coming from a lot of African-Americans, a lot of Republicans,
yep.
A lot of people have some mixed emotions about what they see as the impact on immigration and immigrants on our state. That's going to play itself out. It'll be very interesting to see how Governor O'Malley, who has said do not send him any legislation that looks like what happened in Arizona, because this is not Arizona. He will not sign it. But there's a undercurrent of anger that is brewing in this state and across this country that's going to have an impact on these elections this year.
Well, that'll be our topic on Wednesday. We're going to get into that very deeply on Wednesday. Right now we're going to take are we breaking? Christina snapped her hands and since she's the boss, we are breaking. We're going to come right back. When we come back from this break, we are going to talk about whether or not you need to go to college to get ahead in this world. Are we making too much of college in American society, but not enough of training our young people for the future? We're going to tackle all that in a minute with
mm-hmm.
our four guests. Stay with us. Anthony McCarthy and I will be back in just a minute.